Chapter 39. Crossroads of War. The city of Canaan sat at the border between Kadron and Megrin. In more cordial times, it served as the first Megrin settlement along the most heavily traveled land route between Kadrus and Zoran. Being a trade city had given them coin to spare, and like the rest of Megrin, they had prepared for war. The city wall was new and in pristine order, tall and thick, with high towers outfitted with catapults. It was a city poised on the border of their enemy, and expected to be the first to feel the brunt of any counteroffensive. Ever since the first day of springtime, the city had been on guard for signs of Kadron troop movement. As Megrin forces pushed ever farther into Kadron territory, fears of the Empire's reprisals lessened. Trade with Megrin still carried on apace. Fears of war plied themselves against the scent of gold and lost, as they always seemed to in the end. When a Kadron airship was spotted flying past in the north, within Megrin territory, the lax attitude snapped back into its proper shape. With no enemy ground forces in sight, the soldiers patrolling the walls called for the gates to be partially closed. Horsemen rode out to herd the traders inside the city with all haste, convincing caravan leaders to quicken their plodding pace, lest they arrive at Canaan to find the city shut tight against invasion. Amid the chaos of merchants and horse cavalry mixing upon the roads, no one thought much of a lone traveler in homespun clothes, leading his gelding afoot. He was part of no caravan, carried nothing but the clothes he wore and a few packs slung across the back of his equine companion. When the horseman told him to hurry, he did, quickening his pace and falling in amid the myriad travelers whose days had been compressed by the urgency the Megrin outriders were conveying. Cursory checks were made by the gate guards, but contraband was low on their priorities, with the thought that Kadron forces might have landed nearby. The wooden sailing ships had been harassing Megrin forces of late, ferrying reinforcements about to head off assaults. It seemed to them that it had come time for them to land troops inside Megrin and add a new chapter to the war. The lone traveler took note of this, opinions of their state of mind and all, as he was ushered through the Canaan gates. He looked upon the walls, studied the armaments of the guards, and critiqued their search techniques as they interviewed caravanners. He did this silently, of course, for no impoverished wanderer ought to be a connoisseur of well-run armies. No old mule drover ought to remember Canaan as a simple border outpost with wooden palisades and a dusty marketplace, a mere stopover on the journey from the Kadron heartlands to Zoran and the foreign ports her ships sailed to. But Roshan Solaran did. The airship Ironspar had left him on the plains north of Canaan, on a lightly traveled road between one of the little hamlets of rural Megrin and the main tradeway. There had been a father and son making a trip to Canaan. Roshan had slain them both, and taken their mule as a lark, deciding on the spot to sneak inside the city in disguise. It had been too long since he had been free to indulge such whims. Now that he was inside, Roshan began looking around for weaknesses. The city was of modern design, built up with newfound Megrin wealth. The walls bore Gelkin wards, glowing uniformly in the ether, little tested by weather, and never having seen war. There were troops in plenty, though it was a mere curiosity to the demon. Nothing without the means to attack him in the ether was of any true concern to him. While it was never a precise art, he singled out a few sources that might be strong enough to indicate sorcerers about. None worried him. Only the strongest were worth worrying about. To all appearances, he was clear of such impediments. Satisfied that he had free rein, Roshan looked up at the fortified towers. He idly counted the men up on the walls as he did so, but he was looking for something else. He spotted it along the wall, built into a modest wooden frame with a slat roof above, an alarm bell. A malevolent grin spread across his face as he reached out with a simple telekinesis spell and shoved the bell, reveling in the sound of chaos about to spread. The ringing of the alarm bell, too sheltered and too heavy to have been sounded accidentally or by wind, signaled that the enemy had been sighted, The guards rushed the last of the road travelers they could manage to get within the city walls as they made ready to close and bar the gates. Roshan watched them work, noting that they were doing quite a remarkable job under the circumstances. Whether they were seasoned in combat or not, he could do with having soldiers like those of the Kanem garrison. As Roshan stood admiring the fruits of his mischief, one of the many fresh arrivals to the city crossed too close to him. The man, stocky and with a wobbling gait, jostled into Roshan, shoulder to shoulder, sending the warlock stumbling apace. With an annoyed peek, Roshan held him in place with magic. Allowing his illusory disguise to fade, he spun the man about like a wooden soldier in a child's playtime march, allowing the man to watch as Roshan drew Heaven's Cry and slid it through his belly. Roshan left the man to spill his innards out onto the dirt streets of Kanem, still held upright, and strode over to the city gate. His action had not gone unnoticed. Dozens had watched in horror as he murdered a helpless traveler. A handful had taken note when an old man in careworn clothes faded, only to be replaced by a sword-wielding Kadrin sorcerer. Screams and pointing had eliminated everyone else from the ranks of the oblivious, and word of his presence sparked a general panic on the streets. Roshan continued onward, unfazed. Kanem was a new city, with all the latest fortifications. The city gates opened inward, with a portcullis able to drop down behind. It was an excellent defense against rams, and made the gates nearly as impregnable as the outer walls. However, with a metallic snap and a clatter of chains, Roshan's magic broke the portcullis free, dropping it into place behind the city gate with no ready means for the garrison soldiers to lift it again. Satisfied that one of the two city gates was unusable for the time being, Roshan jogged across Kanem, herding terrified peasants in his path, to the southern gate. Having outpaced any coherent account of what he had done in the north, the guards at the southern gate had lowered the portcullis on their side themselves. Roshan had but to snap the chains to render that gate useless as well. Roshan knew that any city, even one as new as Kanem, must have other means of egress. That was less of a concern than allowing a mass exodus, however. Roshan attempted to count as he killed, but it was a hopeless task. He found five who opposed him with some form of sorcery, but the common soldiers died by the hundreds, the peasants by the thousands. When Roshan finally blasted down the southern city gate, he had found 60 and more Kadrins among those within Kanem. He gave them free rein of the city, and leave to take whatever they wished as they headed home to the Empire.
"Well, it's not as if I wanted to let them escape," Narsekan shouted.
The council was holding one of their few closed sessions in the aftermath of the escape of the prisoner Phelan Sarmon and his hostage, Anzik Fair.
"That thing wasn't human, whatever it was."
The rest of the council members kept to their assigned seats, but Narsekan stood up from his as he spoke, and Jinzan paced, clutching the staff of Galen.
"What did this demon look like?" Jinzan asked, trying to focus his thoughts along practical paths.
Denric Zane had spent most of an irritable day pondering the nighttime raid on Zorin and what it meant. It was the nearest most twinborn came to having nightmares. Little had he known upon Jinzan retiring for the night that Anzik had been found and lost in the span of that frantic chase.
"It looked young," Narsekan began.
Jinzan nodded slightly, knowing that Roshan Solaran appeared as little more than adolescent. Still, he suspected it to be Kyrus, as he had guessed during the night.
"Tall, light hair, dressed in black, though all the Kadrin sorcerers seem to favor the dark. I did not note the color of his eyes or whether he had a pretty smile. If you want such detail, you can go find him yourself. That is what you got that thing for, after all," Narsekan pointed to the staff.
"Not small, not white-haired. Are you certain?" Jinzan asked. He had been worried, but was not sure which adversary was worse. The demon would oppose them, he knew that with absolute certainty. Roshan Solaran was the living embodiment of aggression,
the avatar of war incarnate. Kyrus Hinterdale was a thinker. Somewhere within the boy, paired opposite him world for world, was the heart of a knight. He was not battle-shy, but seemed to have more sense than to rush off blithely into the lair of his enemy. I could not judge exactly, but he appeared tall enough. The hair was most certainly not white. Of course, he could have used any of a number of simple tricks to change his hair color if you saw him differently, Narsican conceded. His source. Did you get a good look at his source? No, Narsican admitted. There was too much magic about. It was blinding the second I tried to shift my vision. I know the Cadrans have some strong sorcerers, but I cannot fathom there being another of such power that we did not know about. Explain from the beginning, Jinzan said. Leave out no detail. The council sat and listened as Narsican gave his account of the events of the previous night. The spymaster was no great storyteller, but his profession had given him a keen eye for detail, and a habit of remembering those details. His tale was dry and professorial. From his telling, you could almost imagine that he had not been there at all, merely reading from reports of those who were. By the end, they knew the name of the dead Stripecat rider who had carried Narsican to the scene of the escape, the size and estimated complement of the Cadran airship, and had descriptions of the mystery sorcerer, the airship captain, and the two Cadrans who had absconded with Anzik, one of whom they already knew was Fael and Sarmon. Jinzan could say little enough in open council, but as he heard bits here and there, they clicked into place like tumblers in a lock. It was most certainly Kyrus Hinterdale who had transferred into Zoran. Denric's conversations with Tanner and Stalyart over the past few days had given him enough background to know that the airship captain was Juliana Archon, the same slip of a sorceress that Brannis Soloran had thrown himself atop to save in the mines of Rainsdark. That Faelin was telling the truth about his connections through Tellurak was obvious. Between him and Kyrus, they had devised the escape plan, sending the airship once he was able to free himself from his cell. When Juliana Archon was pulled from her ship, she must have turned to Brannis in Tellurak. Her counterpart had to be with him. Kyrus came almost immediately thereafter, by Narsican's timeline. Much of the information was merely interesting. He had no way to get to either Brannis or Soria Coinblade, but felt better for understanding how he had been bested. It was simpler than his own escape from Relis Island had been, but it was better than having a mystery on his hands. The best news of all, though, was that Kyrus had arranged for Tanner to be his ambassador. In Kyrus's hands, Anzik might become a commodity, but he could make a deal. Had it been Rashan Soloran, he knew it would merely be a matter of how much torment the demon would inflict on him, before realizing that the boy's peril could not get him to betray Magrin. Jinzan? Kanan asked. Jinzan blinked a few times, realizing that he had been staring out the window as he pondered. My apologies. My mind turns over the possibilities. It sounded like a poor excuse to his own ears, but he had his supporters. Just remember that sort of concentration when you fight Rashan Soloran, Narsican said. You are the only one who can stop him. I am sorry your son was taken, but better that you have the staff of Galen. With that, there is hope that anything can be salvaged from this. Yes. Jinzan, Kanan said to him, we have troops ready to take Ylard's Glen. It is a small force and could well use a practiced hand at sacking the city. The old general smiled at him, her teeth as white as her close-cropped hair. Jinzan was supposed to be above such trivial feelings, but he felt his spirits buoyed by her support. She had inspired Magrin armies in the Freedom War, and he finally felt what it was like to be the one needing morale. He found himself nodding without realizing he was doing so. Very well, he said. I shall go there and lend what aid they need. The defenses were a shambles last I saw them. It should not take over much force to see the city toppled again. I will return afterward with no delay. We have seen that Zoran is vulnerable. I should be here to defend it as much as is feasible. I will see about contacting the Gelkins for more of the speaking helms. A dedicated pair of them could leave you with one, while its mate remains here with the council, Narsekan suggested. The others voiced their consent, and by common accord, they considered the meeting adjourned. Councillor Farron Darjak stayed behind to conduct another meeting with the Interior Ministry, as the rest made their way to the exit. As the two men passed through the doorway side by side, Varduk took Jinzan aside briefly.
We will get Anzik back. Do not think that with all else that goes on, that he has been overlooked. There are just so many things that demand attention.
Anzik, well, he never did demand that much attention, did he? Jinzan's head was filled with more maps than he ever would have believed possible when he was a boy. He knew the reefs of every major port in Tellurak, tradeways on land and sea. He knew the terrain of Coria and its nations, the goblin and ogre homelands, Magrin, Gelk, and Kadrin. He had committed maps of Safshan, Narak, Gardanel, Painu, and what little was known of Elok to memory. Despite few maps ever being made of the place, Jinzan even suspected he knew the layout of the secretive kingdom of Azat, given that it was Acardia in Tellurak. All his knowledge was put to the test when rivers and mountains faded from view, and he saw nothing but ether as he transferred himself to the large cluster of humanoid sources gathered outside Illard's Glen. The startled troops nearly attacked him before he identified himself and took command. He allowed the major in charge of the smallish force of 700 to retain his functional command over his men's deployment, but Jinzan was the one who would order the attack. He had plans to make before he did so. Surveying the city from a hill not so far from where he had camped with Gathak's goblins a season or so earlier, he found it to be rather better repaired than he expected. The walls looked good as new. The only sign of work having been done was the different color of the new stonework. On a hunch, Jinzan looked at the wall in the ether. He had seen it briefly as he arrived from his transference spell, but he had been concentrating on finding his troops, not on the city. The wall shone with ether. How many sorcerers does Kadrin have that they can rebuild that whole wall, complete with wards, in so short a time? The assault force had not brought any cannons. They had traveled lightly, thinking to find the city still crippled from the goblin attack Jinzan had taken part in. Instead, they found a city more formidable, perhaps, than the one that Jinzan and his goblin allies had sacked last autumn.
No matter the wall. It slows us. It will not stop us, Jinzan called out for all his troops to hear.
Whatever reservations he might have about what the improved fortifications boded, he could afford nothing but utter confidence in front of the common soldiers.
Haru bidesi lioki quatuan gelora.
With a supreme effort of ether, Jinzan tore loose a chunk of rock from the hillside the size of a small inn. His source burned with the effort, but he hurled the boulder. The Magrin swordsmen who watched it in awe as the rock had slowly lifted airborne now cheered wildly as it smashed into the wall of Illard's Glen. In the charge that followed, Jinzan hung back, neither out of reluctance nor fear, but simple age. The men all about him were young and fit. Jinzan conserved his breath for spellcasting, keeping up a swift walk, and not worrying about pacing his men. Archers from the walls fired down at them. It seemed that their numbers were not great, but Kadrin had re-garrisoned the city at least. Shaken by the knowledge that incredible magic was at work, and not on their side in this battle, the defenders seemed demoralized. There were no catapults raining gravel, horseshoes, or the like down on them, nor were their spells being cast back at them from the city. As the Magrin swordsmen neared the breach in the wall, Kadrin's spearmen rushed to fill the gap. There were also a few creatures. Jinzan had not seen their like before. Human in general shape, but thicker and stockier, perhaps twice as wide at the shoulder. He saw no armor on the creatures unless it covered them so completely as to resemble grayish-brown skin. Unlike their human counterparts, these few standing amid their defensive lines carried hammers.
The stone folk. The Daru. Kadrin must have bargained with them to have rebuilt their walls so fast. These may be just stone workers, not warriors.
Jinzan's cautious optimism about the occupation of the stone folk, mixed in with Illard's Glen defenders, was short-lived. As soon as the two forces engaged, he saw that these were not simple laborers. While the Magrin swordsmen batted aside spear tips to press their Kadrin foes, the hammer-wielding Daru batted whole soldiers aside. Jinzan knew he needed to lend his aid at the wall. He quickened his pace and ran through in his mind the spells he knew that he could use with his own men in close combat with his targets.
Fetru Oglo Daxgak Sevdu Winlu, Jinzan mumbled,
having decided on one that he could aim finely enough for his purposes. Lightning forked from the staff of Galen as Jinzan managed to use it to conduct much of the needed ether, sparing his source the full force of channeling that much power. The first Daru hit by the bolt was felled instantly, smoke rising from his flesh. As the lightning continued onward, raking across the line of defenders, human and Daru alike, it became clear that the stone folk lived up to the stories of their hardiness. Though every human struck by Jinzan's spell was slain, only the first of the Daru, hit by the very strongest of the blast, was fatally wounded. The others looked the worse for it, but fought on. Fortunately, the advantage of numbers gained by the loss of the Kadrin spearmen allowed Jinzan's swordsmen to overwhelm the remaining Daru. The defense was paltry beyond what had hastened to the stricken wall's defenses. Reinforcements from other parts of the city continued to arrive, but in no numbers to hope to drive back the Magrin force. The ground beneath Jinzan's feet began to rumble. He could sense the ether without having to switch his vision over to see it. His head snapped to one side, then the other, searching for any sign of Kadrin sorcerers. Instead, huddled behind a chunk of the boulder he had hurled to sunder the city wall, was another of the Daru. This one was unarmed, and was on his hands and knees, head bowed. Jinzan did not have to be able to hear the spell words to know that it was likely the Aethersmith who had carved the wall's new wards. Before he had a chance to applaud himself for the deduction, Jinzan found that claws of rock were rising from the earth all about him. Jinzan rushed to draw aether to counter the threat as the tips of the claws grew taller than his head. They reached up and over him, began curling around and down to interlock, and crushed the life from him with a stony embrace. Jinzan had not the time to form a proper spell. He kept his mind as calm as he could, and sent a blast of ether all about himself. Rock rained down across the vicinity of the breached wall as the stone claws exploded. Kadrin and Magrin alike dodged the debris or were injured by it. The rock did not care. The one who commanded the rock looked up from his spell, pale eyes glaring with a hatred that transcended language. Jinzan saw that a yellowish gem was embedded in the Daru's forehead. It had to mean something, but Jinzan knew next to nothing of the stone folk's culture. With neither word nor gesture, the Daru Aethersmith sank into the ground as if it were quicksand.
I cannot let him escape me.
The risk of suffering ambush attacks from beneath the ground worried Jinzan, for he knew not the limits of the stone man's power. To head off any such worries, he repeated the spell from the hilltop, tearing loose a small section of Illard's Glen from the rest. Presumably, Jinzan thought, it held the stone man as well. Jinzan raised the chunk of earth as high as he might have been able to throw a small rock, then brought it back down, hard. He drove the section of ground into more ground as hard as he could. He waited a few moments, ignoring the rout that was going on all about him as he focused on making certain that his foe was no longer a threat. When those moments passed without incident, he sifted through the shattered rock until he found the Daru's body, telekinetically lifting it free and laying it out on the street. He looked from the Daru to the staff of Galen in his hands. Whomever he had just killed was likely well respected among the stone folk. Though he knew little of their ways, their reverence of stonework was their hallmark. Unless the stone folk were fools, They would know that McGrin had been responsible for the death of their workers and their ethersmith.
Allies. Cadran has never before taken allies. It is likely that these were just hirelings, paid blood price for a quick repair of the city. Now, though, whether Cadran gained an ally, we have likely made an enemy today.
Jinzan returned leadership of the invasion force to its former commander. Drawing once more on the vast power of the staff, he transferred himself back to Zorin. Jinzan's journey back was much easier. He had returned home via that same spell several times, and had begun to learn the look of Zorin in the ether. His fear popped back into existence in a little-used courtyard off to the seaward side of the council building. The double doors leading inside were left open, unguarded. Jinzan clutched the staff of Galen tightly in his hands, put on his guard by the unusual desertion of even so insignificant a post as a back garden. Jinzan peeked through the open door before proceeding inside. He saw nothing unusual, except that he saw very little at all. There ought to have been people about. The hour was not yet so late, and there was no event in the city that would draw the functionaries from their posts, or the guards for that matter. Jinzan looked about and found nothing. Looking into the ether, he saw folk gathered outside the front entrance of the building, but nothing in sight within. He wandered the foyer, looking for signs of what might have driven everyone out of doors. He was nearly ready to go out and ask among the crowd when he noticed the first body. Crumpled on the first landing of the stairway up to the first mezzanine level, one of the guards had been torn in half. Jinzan had just come from a sight far more horrific. Bodies were strewn about Illard's Glen like a child's dolls after a tantrum. The single dead guard knotted Jinzan's stomach.
"I am the guardian of McGrin," Jinzan thought as he approached the stairs, placing first one foot, then another upon them as he crept upward. "So long as I wield this staff, whatever may threaten Zorin will ultimately fall to me. I cannot go out and show them that I am as fearful as they are."
As he ascended the levels of the headquarters of McGrin's High Council, Jinzan found more bodies. He began to imagine that a striped cat had gone berserk, so savage was the carnage. Men were not merely killed, but lay in pieces, scattered down stairways and corridors. As he got higher, he began to hear something as well. At first he thought he imagined it, but as he advanced, it became clear that it was singing. When he got to the landing halfway up to the top level where the council chamber was, he paused to listen to a somewhat off-key tenor sing an old McGrin folk song. "Rains fall, marking the springtime, flowers bloom, colors so bright, fireflies herald the nighttime, dance in the meadows tonight." Jinzan knew the words, listening to a few more familiar verses before gathering his nerve to finish his ascent. The stairs seemed farther apart than Jinzan remembered them, his feet heavier. He forced them to move. The doors to the council chamber were shambles. One lay near the top of the landing, forcing Jinzan to step over it. The other hung askew, dangling by a single battered hinge. The floor was slick with blood, and littered with the bodies of men. Jinzan recognized a few as members of the Interior Ministry. Jinzan's breath caught in his throat as he saw into the council chambers. It was a slaughterhouse, appearing as if everyone who had been meeting with Councillor Farron and the Interior Ministry had been butchered, along with a large contingent from the city guard and a number of regular infantry. Jinzan could only imagine the scene that had befallen in his absence. As for Farron Darjak, the Interior Minister was impaled through the chest, staked to the council table by a wickedly serrated sword, which had cracked the heavy stone table. Seated right next to the dead councillor, slouched across the arms of Jinzan's own chair at the council table, and indolently popping grapes into his mouth from the council's refreshments, was Rashan Solaran.
"About time you got here. I only know a few McGrin songs.
I was going to have to start breaking into Akkadian sea shanties if you had dallied much longer on those stairs, Rishon called out casually, choosing to speak in Kadran now that he was done singing.
You think yourself clever, demon? Jinzan snapped, anger helping him find a voice that had thickened and clogged his throat just a moment before.
Not as clever as I thought myself before your cannons sank my airship when I arrived. I would not have expected them to aim so well at an airborne target, Rishon replied.
We learned quickly. One airship over the city was enough for us. Two was brash and foolish, and now you will pay for that.
Oh, there was another one here? Rishon mused aloud. I suppose I must know which one that was.
Ha! I shall certainly hear of it when I return without mine, then.
The demon seemed amused and completely at ease. Jinzan could barely convince his reluctant legs to move, but he forced himself to advance. Jinzan knew well the lessons of history. His forebears had parlayed with Rishon Soloran to their own destruction. He was not about to concede the initiative.
Kanethio Mandraxe.
Jinzan thrust the staff of Galen in Rishon's direction, aiming a blast of ether his way. The blast tore through the corpse of Counselor Pharaon and slammed into a shielding spell that protected the demon.
Not a talker, I see, replied the nonplussed demon.
Twisting about in the chair, Rishon Soloran got his feet beneath him and hopped up to the council table, yanking Heaven's Cry free of the table, further cracking it.
Iket Jimagu Dinpik Wanapai, Jinzan called forth bolts of flame, but again his attack struck an impenetrable defense.
Rishon examined his sword, giving it a flick of the wrist to clean it of Pharaon's blood. He began stalking toward Jinzan with a hungry look in his eyes.
Once I have that staff away from you, this little war will be at an end, Rishon promised.
Jinzan heard the lie, though, clear as if Rishon had said it aloud. It would merely turn into a one-sided slaughter once there was no one left to oppose the demon. Jinzan needed no words to use telekinesis. He used that to his advantage.
You know what you must do to,
Jinzan said as he lifted two of the heavy chairs from behind the demon.
Take it.
The two chairs slammed together, crushing Rishon Soloran from both sides. But the attack caught the demon by not the slightest surprise. The chairs passed through him to strike one another as he stepped through them, briefly incorporeal.
I really have been at this a lot longer than you have. I read up a bit about you. Excellent student, but a bit of an irritable sort. First on ranking day your last 2 years at the academy. Quite admirable. Fought in the little rebellion that freed Magrin from Kadran rule. With distinction, it seems. You are even twin-born. Please understand that I hate having to kill twin-born. It is a tragic waste. But that is how much I want that staff.
Jinzan swallowed. He had imagined the encounter differently. He thought he would be trading spells with the demon like a pair of bare-knuckle pit fighters. Instead, he was finding his attacks ineffective, and the demon more interested in lecturing than fighting back.
What are you doing, trying to frighten me into bargaining the staff for my life?
Jinzan demanded. His mind spun. He shook his thoughts, angrily demanding an answer to how he could hurt the demon. But no answer came readily to mind.
No. Once I realized your limitations, I knew I was in no real danger from you. You ought to have bargained with more dragons. Those are dangerous. They have a draw like that staff gives you, but they know what to do with it.
Blah, 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 spell comes out. It's like fighting an academy student. You do not even see your folly.
Because you know I am a demon. You are not watching the ether as you attack me.
Jinzan frowned.
What am I missing?
He switched to ether vision. He could locate the demon by the shielding spell around him and the rune-forged sword in his hand. The demon himself was a ghost in the ether.
Fetru oglo daxgak sev duwenlu.
Jinzan pointed the staff of Galen at Rishon, striking him with the same lightning spell that he had just used in Illard's Glen. Just before he finished the spell, though, he noticed a change in the shielding spell. Jinzan snapped his eyes back into the light. He glared at Rashan, incredulous.
You changed your shield spell.
Blah, blah, warlock recognizes your spell. Blah, blah, shield is ready when you finish. Try your little telekinesis tricks all you like, but I do not see how you can keep pace with me.
I will find a way, you monster, Jinzan shouted,
blustering to keep despair from engulfing him.
People call me that, but really, what have I done but wage war? Rashan asked. I enjoy my work, but so does many a general. I may be guilty of hubris, I admit, but nothing worse.
Kidnapping children is nothing worse to you, Jinzan screamed, finally striking a telling blow when the demon's eyes widened in surprise.
I did what?
You would have me believe that you know nothing of my son's kidnapping by your pet Akkadian? Jinzan demanded.
Ah, I think I begin to see now. You are accusing me of Brannis's crimes? Still, I suppose I gave him leave to do as he liked, so I bear some amount of blame. I think I was enjoying this more when I was firmly on the moral high ground, fighting off an aggressor in defense of my homeland.
Rashan brandished Heaven's Cry and leapt toward Jinzan. Jinzan was caught off guard by the demonic madman's abrupt shift of mood. He stumbled back, tentative on the slick footing of the bloody floor. He drew frantically, piling ether into his own shielding spell. Heaven's Cry was turned aside, but the demon was unrelenting.
I have to get away somehow, Jinzan realized. I cannot win this day. I am no match head-on against Rashan Solaran.
Jinzan tried to use the Staff of Galen as a weapon, and noticed quickly that the demon was mindful of damaging it. Twice Jinzan moved to block slashing strikes, only to have Rashan pull his attack at the last moment. Still, Jinzan was no young man, and he would tire soon from the exertion of the combat, whereas the demon could conceivably keep up his assault indefinitely. He needed to buy himself the time to make his escape.
At least I care enough about my son that I will seek to save him, Jinzan said,
beginning to grow short of breath.
What is that supposed to mean? Rashan asked, not pausing in his assault.
Curse him, Jinzan swore. He is too focused.
If you return to Cadrus in time, you may just find out, Jinzan answered, trying to give as cryptic an answer as he might, while still leaving enough to pique the demon's curiosity. This time it worked. Rashan cocked his head to the side, looking puzzled.
What are you going on about? The demon asked.
Jinzan had little experience with silent casting of battle spells. It was, by common agreement of every sorcerer he had studied under, quite a bad idea. However, since he had never studied with anyone who had defeated a demon or a warlock, let alone both in one body, he was inclined to venture outside the realm of commonly agreed-upon teachings. A blast of ether caught Rashan in the chest, launching the diminutive demon across the length of the council chamber to slam heavily against the far wall.
See you in Cadrus, Jinzan shouted.
He took the time only for that one parting barb before beginning his next spell, drawing for all he was worth, and with all the might the Staff of Galen lent him.
Doxlo intuve, minep, gahalixviu, junumar, tequalex, ferindak, uzgunmani, degdardan, vesvata iho.
A sphere of ether formed around him.
Jinzan had no intention of heading into the heart of the Kadrin Empire,
but he needed something to convince the demon to leave Zoran once he was no longer there to at least put up a token defense. All Jinzan could do, as he popped into the ether, was hope that he had given enough cause for Rashan Solaran to worry.